Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher, and welcome to the premiere of our new weekly feature, Tech Tuesday. Coming up, we'll hear from Consumer Reports about the pros and cons of that new cost-saving light bulb. Right now, we welcome Deborah Jasper and Betsy Hubbard. They're the co-founders of Mindset Digital. It's a social media consulting company. Since 2007, Deborah and Betsy have provided social media training and consulting to more than 7,500 people. Their clients have included KeyBank, the OSU Medical Center, the Ukrainian Council of Ministers of All People, Norwegian Media, and the Ohio Board of Regents. You can follow them on Twitter at Deborah Jasper, DeBraJasper, and also at Betsy Hubbard, BetsyHubbard, and at Mindset Digital. You can also tweet us at Tech Tuesday, TechTues, Tech Tues, and at Ann Fisher, WOSU. If you want to talk about social media, that's what we're talking about today. Deborah, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here,
and
Ann.
And Betsy Hubbard.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks, Ann.
They've been on before. You know what we talk about, but there is so much newsy to talk about when it comes to Facebook. There's a whole bunch of stuff that's been happening. So let's talk about Facebook's not yet unveiled new timeline. About what people can expect about that, because there's a lot of chit-chat about that.
Yes, timeline, very controversial. A lot of folks are worried that it's the new resume, but it's basically they're going to be unveiling it soon, depending on a lawsuit that's pending right now. We can talk about that in a moment. But they expect to be unveiling it soon, and it really is sort of a scrapbook of your digital life. So they're compiling what you've been doing on Facebook over the years. For a lot of folks, it goes back to their college days. So it'll go back to 07. We were working with someone the other day in one of our social media camps, and she said, look, I was a freshman in college in 07, and now she's a professional.
And so her point is, what's being unsaid is.
Right. I'm worried. And so we are saying, in some sense, it used to be that what was private was the default, right? Your life was private unless you worked very hard to make it public. Today, the default, in some sense, is public, and you have to work a lot harder to make things private. So we think there'll be a lot of people spending a lot of time on timelines or in timeline trying to make it more acceptable and maybe getting rid of some of those college photos.
So you'll be able to go into your timeline. And what will you do? What will you be able to do, Betsy?
Well, it will automatically compile your history of your life, you know, since you've been on Facebook. So it'll have all your posts and photos you've been tagged in and all of that. But you do have control over that. Once you have the timeline enabled, you can go in and start hiding things and deleting them. And so you can kind of do a sanitized version of your life to share. But then you can also fill in gaps. So, you know, since Facebook knows when we were born, they know our birthday, it will start with the day you were born. And for those many years in between, you can go in and upload photos and, you know, add key life events and really try to create this as your digital scrapbook.
You can expand it if you want.
Yes, you can.
Yes. So,
what's it going to look like? Have you seen what? I haven't seen that.
We have. There's a way that you can go in and enable it earlier. And about a million people have done so far. So people have it already. It's a very different look. It's more visually appealing. It starts with a very large photo in the upper half. So it immediately you get to determine that photo. They call it the cover, sort of your cover, you know, of your life. So you do a large photo on the top, and then it's just a timeline. It's chronological. You just scroll down, and it goes year by year by year.
And, yeah, Debbie?
Well, one of the things I was going to say that's interesting about this is that they say today that more than 75% of recruiters are now looking at social media and looking online before they make decisions about hiring. And about 70% have made a decision not to hire someone based on what they found. And so some folks are worried that this new digital footprint will be showing an awful lot about your life that maybe you wouldn't
dishing it up.
Right. You wouldn't be handing over in your resume. On the other hand, I think there's a lot of folks who say, look, I don't do anything on Facebook that I'm embarrassed by. I have no photos that I'm worried about, and I'm fine with this. And it's great. I mean, it's awesome that I have sort of my digital footprint. I can share with my kids, or I can share with people that I care about. So you can look at this in different ways.
It's not necessarily bad.
Right. Oh, and I think for a lot of us, I mean, I always said what happens in Vegas stays on Facebook and stays on Twitter. I did not make that up, but that's just sort of a, you know, a standard saying. So I've always thought what I do on Facebook and what I do on Twitter is public and is a public persona. So I'm not real worried about what happens in my timeline, but others of us are, or we're worried about what other people post. I mean, that's the other thing. You know, someone else tagged you in a photo that's less than flattering. Some of it, though, isn't that you're embarrassed. It's just, do you really want that photo of you at the beach in your bathing suit on your timeline. I don't know. Now, that mortifies me. So it just depends. It's not necessarily, you know, terrible things. It's just less than flattering photos of you or whatever.
So once this, right now you can get into it early and look at your timeline, but you can't get into anybody else's yet.
Right. If you've enabled the timeline, if you've gone, there's sort of a backdoor way into this. If you've enabled it, then you can see other people who've also enabled their timeline early. Okay. So there's, like I said, about a million people out there have been toying with it early. You know, there's 800 million people on Facebook. So it's a very small percentage of folks who've done this. They expect that it's going to be unveiled now. They're predicting as of October 6th, they will start rolling this out across Facebook. The holdup right now is that there is a company that already offers you the opportunity to create a digital scrapbook of your life, and it's called timelines.com. And they're upset with this new timeline feature. So there's a meeting in court today, and I'm sure this will get hashed out one way or the other. But that's a little bit of the delay in the rollout of what was supposed to be happening starting last week.
What's their argument? Because they're asking you to create something, and Facebook's just kind of creating this for you.
Right. I mean, I don't know if we want to get into the legal complaint here, but they're
just sort of arguing they were in this field first.
They were doing this first, and they have the domain name, and it's identified with them, and they have some intellectual property around this, and we'll see how it gets resolved.
But. Right. But there's some other big changes that have been coming out already that we've already seen, and one of them that folks are concerned about and some people like. I actually like this, but Facebook is making decisions about what it thinks you're most interested in and putting that in your top news. You know, it's your top stories. So it's looking at who you interact with and who you like and which photos you've clicked on and which links you've clicked on. And based on your activity, they have a complicated algorithm that's saying, hey, Ann, we think you'll like these stories. And they're going to put those at the top. But in some ways, I see you nodding your head. In some ways, I think this is a lot like what newspapers do when they decide what goes on the front page, you know, but they're doing it based on what you've already done. Now, that doesn't mean they're always going to be accurate, but they're trying to make this more useful.
I think that what bugs me about it is that I like being exposed to things that surprise me. And if everything is always what I've always sort of part of this complicated algorithm, and it's always something that I'm going to feel comfortable with, it's probably people I like or things that I'm going to like, that's my concern is I like being exposed to lots of different things. And I don't know.
Right.
And I'd love to know what those algorithms are.
In some ways, the new design may make it easier, because what happened is that in the old design, they did have the top news versus the most recent. And there are two different tabs. Well, about 50% of people on Facebook never checked the most recent tab. They only always looked at what was heavily filtered for them. So for many people, this is actually opening up a lot more news on Facebook, because they scroll beyond the top news, they get into the most recent news, and they're starting to look at that news ticker that has all the other stuff that's going on. So for a lot of us, we're actually seeing a lot more activity that's occurring on Facebook. It's just divvied up in a different way.
And I'd say it's just much more visible now. Now you know Facebook is making decisions about what you see and you don't see in a way that you might not have known before. But that ticker, of all the things that we hear people complain about, that ticker on the right-hand side might be the thing that people complain about most, because they feel like it's just noise. So do I really care what my sister-in-law Robin is listening to on Spotify? Not necessarily. You know, a lot of information is coming at me there that I may not care about or need or want to look at. Now, of course, people could just not look at the ticker, but for some people, they find that impossible. They end up going over there and looking anyway. And I would also, another big debate around this is, when is sharing just oversharing? If I'm not making decisions, if I've signed up for apps and they're automatically sharing what I'm reading on, you know, in the Washington Post, and it's automatically sharing what music I'm listening to, and I'm not making decisions to share, then maybe that information just isn't as relevant or interesting. It may be just white noise eventually, and that we're all going to tune out because there's no way to tune in to that much information.
If you're just joining us, welcome to our premiere of Tech Tuesday. With us right now, Betsy Hubbard and Deborah Jasper, the co-founders of Mindset Digital Social Media Company. They are social media advisors. They've been on before. You've heard them before. If you have a question or comment for them, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Right now, we're talking about all those changes to Facebook, and it just seems like it's a constant drumbeat of changes. Is this the way it's always going to be?
Yes. I'd say yes. That's a pretty safe.
I think that's an easy
which
one.
Which is why we now have a weekly
segment called Tech Tuesday,
which will include coming up next week, a gadget guy from geek.com, and also coming up later on, deputy editor of Consumer Reports. She's going to talk about those new light bulbs and why you can't buy any more of the old ones coming up in a few months. So 614-292-8513 if you want to give us a call and talk about that, talk about Facebook. Now, the privacy settings, are they easier or harder to understand?
You know,
Betsy,
I would say that they've never been easy to understand.
Right.
So, and I, at least my personal experience, I'm not finding this easier. They have changed them. So it looks like there's fewer options that you're making, but you are still maybe sharing more information than you realize. I'd say it's gotten more complicated because you're not only making decisions about what Facebook can share, but when you opt into these other Facebook-like services, Spotify, Netflix, other things that you may be doing in Facebook, then that's a different set of settings, and you're making those choices at a different time. So it's, I would say it's more complicated.
You know, I mean, and I would say we do 3-day social media camps, and we're spending more and more time. It used to be we taught Facebook in a couple of hours. Now it's at least a half a day. It's probably going to end up being 6 hours because really trying to understand this is getting tougher, especially for companies. You know, they're spending a lot of money and time in this space. They're using Facebook to try to reach people with their messages, and they have no idea, you know, are their messages getting out? Some estimates are between only 10 to 20% of company messages are actually showing up in people's feeds. So they're trying to figure out all of this too. Increasingly, it's you have to be fairly sophisticated to keep up with all of these changes, and especially if you're trying to keep your information private, mm-hmm. which is why we sort of say think twice, post once. Because it's a lot easier to think before you post than to go back and try to get rid of that post.
Well, and understand what you're opting into. I mean, another big thing that's coming about with this set of changes is that Facebook really wants you to spend even more time on their platform. I mean, on average, people on Facebook spend 23 minutes a day using Facebook, which is just a phenomenal amount of time in the online world. They're trying to make it your one-stop destination. So now I not only go to Facebook to catch up on the news of my friends and my family and my coworkers, but I'm going to read the paper there because I'm going to read the Washington Post social reader, which means I can go through the entire Washington Post and never leave the confines of Facebook. I'm going to watch videos there. I'm going to stream the music I want to listen to all in one place. But all of those, as Deborah was saying, has implications for sharing, because when I do that on Facebook, the record of all that activity is getting published out.
And that ticker thing, if nothing else.
And that ticker thing, if nothing else. And it gets published to my timeline. So now you can go back and see, well, what was Betsy reading yesterday and what music was she listening to?
So people who don't want public access to when they check a book out of the library, in other words, might want to think about this. And in those terms, we're going to continue our conversation.
And we have a question. And
we have a question coming up. We'll get to that.
On Twitter.
We have a couple of calls coming in. We'll get to those when we return to our premiere episode of Tech Tuesday. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
In July, Betsy Neisner went in for her regular cancer treatment.
The cupboard was bare. There was a nationwide shortage.
Doctors and hospitals say drug shortages, once rare, are the new normal. And that raises troubling questions about who gets what when supplies run low. I'm Neil Conan, the causes and effects of drug shortages, next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk
Talk of the Nation from 2 to 4 on 89.7 NPR News. Cloudy skies today, some sunshine later this afternoon, and a high near 70 degrees. Clear skies tonight and a low of 47. Sunshine for Wednesday and a high of 73.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Wexner Center, presenting the world premiere of the Builders Association's House Divided, a multimedia theater project inspired by Steinbeck's The Grapes of Wrath that examines the impact of the current mortgage crisis. October 6th through the 8th, wexarts.org.
All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to the premiere of our Tech Tuesday feature. Every Tuesday at 11 o'clock, we'll be talking with, almost every Tuesday, our guests right now, Betsy Hubbard and Deborah Jasper, co-founders of Mindset Digital Social Media Company. And we'll also be talking with Consumer Reports about consumer issues that you care about, and also gadgets, which everybody likes to talk about gadgets. We have a guy coming on starting next week from geek.com. That's he's really looking forward to getting started with us on that. So every Tuesday, Tech Tuesday. This is now still with us, Deborah Jasper and Betsy Hubbard. So if you have questions about Facebook, that's what we're talking about, all the changes on Facebook. And there was never a better time to start Tech Tuesday than this week when everyone has so many questions about Facebook. Brett in Grandview, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Brett.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Well, it was more of a comment. I just wanted to say how great those new groups, I guess they're relatively new, like you're allowed to make a group with a certain subject or whatever and invite friends, and friends can invite friends. And that has really enabled friends of mine from around the world to share music and share that sort of thing and share experiences and concert experiences and that sort of thing. And it's been really great. And friends of mine are meeting other friends of mine. It's really creating a genuine global community of my friends.
Versus, what's the difference between that and your Facebook?
Well, the Facebook is more like, you know, people would have to go and search on a wall or something, whereas if they were to just go to the group, they could see anything that the people in the group are posting.
Okay.
Yeah. This is part of Facebook trying to help you deal with the information overload and making Facebook a more relevant experience for you. One of the things that you can do is create groups, or now they're calling them lists, and they're building it in automatically. So you may notice under the redesign, you have a list where they've started to find family members and they've put them on a family list. You can create a list of close friends. So now instead of seeing the news from everybody I'm following on Facebook, I can just tune in to say, what's my family been doing? And that's, I found that very useful, because now I have just a targeted list of, you know, people I really don't want to miss. And like Brett's saying, you can also just post only to those people. So now if I want to share pictures of my kids, but I only wanted to go to my family members because I don't want my coworkers to see yet another picture of my kids playing baseball, you know, I can post that to my family only. So they're trying to make Facebook just more relevant for you. And it is a great feature. A lot of people
like that.
They're trying
to compete with Google Plus.
Right? Okay. So they're trying to compete with Google Plus, too.
And is Google Plus, does that pose a big competition?
Not yet.
But if anybody is going to give Facebook a run for its money, it's Google Plus. They're up to 43 million users. Mm-hmm. And it just so
10%.
Happens that they've opened up to the public with that. You know, they were in the invitation-only phase.
Right.
Just before Facebook announced these new latest changes. So many people see that, you know, Facebook, the timing of this was
responding to that.
Yes.
Brett, thanks for your call. Take care. Siak in Clintonville, is that how I pronounce your name?
It's Seek.
Seek. Okay. Hi, Seek.
Yeah.
Welcome to the show.
Hi. I just had a question about how this timeline will affect business pages.
That's an excellent question. And what we're hearing, the buzz, is that businesses are going to be rolled over to a timeline-like page as well. So instead of thinking of your business as just giving, you know, daily updates of what's going on, you're going to have a similar chronological story of your business.
Yes.
There's, I haven't seen anything recently about when that's expected to happen, but that's what the going thinking is.
But think how cool that could be if you're debating whether you want to do business with a particular organization, or if you're thinking, do I want to donate money to this charity? You can go see their timeline, see the kind of work they've been doing, find out a lot more information about them. I think that could be really cool. I think that might be something businesses would actually like.
Right, that it's going to be a much richer presence in some sense, and that you are presenting kind of a more bigger picture of who you really are as an organization or as a business.
So is it going to then make the website obsolete? As far as
there's
in terms
a lot
of people,
talk already about whether websites are obsolete. But,
you know, you go to someone's website,
right,
and you get their phone number and all that junk. Well, I mean, will the timeline have stuff like contact information and that sort of thing?
Sure, it will. Okay. And I'm sure if you, you know, ask Mark Zuckerberg, he's hoping that it will. I mean, that's what they want to do. Anything that can get more time spent on Facebook is really their goal.
And, you know, we spend more time. Mindset Digital has a Facebook page. We'd love for everyone to like us because we tweet out a lot, or we post on Facebook a lot of updates on what's happening on Facebook. And, of course, we tweet out it at Mindset Digital. But we're spending more time really as a company on our Facebook page than we are on our website. It's much more vibrant right now.
Send out messages to people.
It's easier.
Yeah, it's easier. And it's an easy way to keep in touch with all the people who like you. And so it feels less static. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of companies are starting to see that Facebook really matters in the business arena. And we do have a quick question
here
about...
Seek, by the way. Seek, thanks for your call.
Yes.
Take care.
And related to that, Carrie Sullivan is asking, what's next for Facebook brand pages? Has Timeline Ticker reduced the visibility for brands? So are companies worried now that with all these Facebook changes, it's harder for me as a company to get my posts into your stream? You know, mm-hmm. It's harder for you to see my posts. But really, it's always been hard. And actually, some statistics, as we mentioned earlier, show that people are only seeing 10 to 20% of brand updates anyway. And when you consider I have 130 friends on Facebook and I'm following 80 organizations, it's hard to get me to tune into your particular organization. It's why organizations are creating really cool videos and their posts are getting more extreme, because mm-hmm. it's getting harder to get people's attention. But Facebook's going to make that easier in some sense with things like sponsored stories and things that businesses can pay for to get more visibility. Because in the end, Facebook's trying to figure out, you know, how am I monetizing this?
As if they haven't figured something out. Sounds like they've already figured
out. Well, they're making a lot of money. But I mean, also, how am I upping that?
Sure.
How am I making more money from this? How am I making ads more relevant? How are companies going to get more for their time and investment? What's the ROI of investing in Facebook?
Lonnie in Columbus, you want to continue the conversation about how companies can use social media for good business? Hi, Lonnie.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Good. Well, I work for a company. I'm a sales manager, fairly new with this company, and this company has had no Facebook presence. I like the comments on the timeline and the opportunities there, but I'm just looking for ideas or ways to maximize helping a company move into this arena of social media on Facebook.
That's a great question. There are great opportunities out there, and I think you're starting exactly right, which is thinking about it first before you jump in, because there's a lot of strategic decisions that need to be made up front about why you're doing this, what value it's going to have. The biggest mistake we see is that people move into Facebook just presuming that people have a deep interest in your news, and that all you need to do is post your press releases or put up headline news and people will flock to your page. And that's really not true. People are only going to tune in to information that's of value to them. So this is a long process. You know, we walk people through sort of a one-day planning process and even thinking about what you need to do to prepare and launch a page. But I will say, you know, just a couple of thoughts off the top of my head is that first you really have to decide, why would people even bother to tune into what you have to say? Because this is an opt-in world. People are going to have to go seek out your page. They're going to have to like it. They're going to have to choose to stop in that flow of information and pay attention to what you're delivering to them. So you really need to add value to their life. And that's a little trickier than most people think.
Right. And then the second thing you really have to think about is, what if you build it, they come and say things you don't like? How are you going
to respond?
And, you know, so when we work with companies on this, we say both you have to be ready to get people to come, and also second, to be able to respond in ways that are useful and makes sense and that you have a strategy for this. So it's important to have, you wouldn't launch a newsletter and you wouldn't launch a television campaign and you wouldn't launch a print ad campaign without a strategy. And the same holds true for whether you get into Facebook or Twitter. You know, it's important to have a strategy.
The general, we focus on what your mindset is, and we think the general shift around Facebook is that it's really not about commercials. It really is about forming connections. So even entering into the space, you have to think about how is it that I'm really trying to connect up with those people who are my partners or vendors or clients or whoever they are. So it's a different way of thinking.
Thank you, Lonnie.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet. 614-292-8513, Deborah Jasper and Betsy Hubbard, co-founders of Mindset Digital. They're going to be with us for another 9 minutes. So if you do have a question or comment for them, get it in soon. Stephen in Newark, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Stephen.
Hi.
Hi.
I've been listening with a lot of interest on the commercial aspects of this timeline thing. But as a private user, I'm actually rather disturbed that about the potential privacy.
Are you there, Stephen?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, about the potential privacy violations. Okay.
Privacy violations.
Okay.
I frankly find it a little creepy that Facebook wants to know who my close friends and my coworkers are.
Creepy's been a word bandied about quite a bit in the last few days regarding this timeline.
Yeah.
Betsy?
Absolutely. You're in good company. There's a lot of people who are concerned and think that Facebook doesn't have a very good record on privacy. I mean, Facebook sort of has a different orientation. They think that what you do should be public, and of course it's in their best business interest for it to be, because as you point out, what they're accumulating is a really vast database on who you are, what you like, what ads you like, what music you like, what television you like, you know, how you spend your time, who your connections are. And that's really useful, because they do then turn around and sell that to, in essence, to advertisers who are able to deliver very targeted ads to you. So that is the bargain you're making. You know, when I choose to use Facebook, to me, it's worth it. I'm willing to share that information because the benefits I get from Facebook outweigh my concerns. But that's an individual user decision.
It is. And privacy is complicated. I mean, Betsy was talking about this earlier, but there are actually more words in Facebook's privacy policy than in the U.S. Constitution. So it gives you a sense of, even if you try to go and sit down and read the privacy policy, it's complicated. Even before the changes, the New York Times estimated you had to make over 170 clicks to fully set your privacy. Now, that's changed a lot. There are fewer clicks, but there are a lot more granular choices that you're having to make. You know, do I want this person to see this post? Do I want that person to see this post? It's gotten more complicated. So our recommendation is that you sit down and spend some time with this and really think through. We do post, if you friend us at Mindset Digital, at our Facebook page, we post information on privacy settings. We post a lot of information on what's happening, the latest in Facebook. We'll be posting about what's going on with the timeline and when that's rolling out. But it's complicated, and it does take time.
Thanks, Stephen.
As someone with limited time, I just have to say that the changes have been, the basic effect has been that I've pretty much made everything private. At this point. I'm using Facebook an awful lot less than I used to.
Yeah. Thank you, Stephen, for bringing that up. We have a couple more calls I want to get to, but I also wanted to talk about the people who are opting out of Facebook. And these are not anti-social media people, but people who are saying, I'm done with it.
Yeah. Some people are just saying, I don't have the time to manage this. This is a management issue, a time management issue.
Right.
But we're still not seeing a lot of that. The consensus really is that people find Facebook, like Betsy, really valuable. They want to know their cousin had a baby. They want to know about it. They want to follow the companies that they like. There's a lot of information and critical information about your family and friends that you're getting on Facebook. So we haven't seen a lot of that yet. We're not saying it won't happen or that people won't decide they have other options, but it hasn't been in mass, certainly.
McLean and Hilliard, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, McLean.
Hello, Anne, and hello, everyone. I wanted to call in and make a couple comments about the algorithms that Facebook is using. Mm-hmm. And I've seen, Google uses similar types of algorithms. I use Facebook, probably around that 23 minutes a day, more than I probably should. But I'm these algorithms strike me as a little bit dangerous to our democracy in general, in the sense that they kind of keep each person in their own little bubble, kind of isolated on the things that they're exposed to. I don't think that, I mean, generally information should be property any more than you know, on some other things. And another thing I see in Facebook that's hard to think about, but it, you know, we kind of have this participatory network already in place. Why don't we start to look at things like this as political tools? I mean, people already are doing this, but maybe even to vote and things like that. I just wanted to see if you guys could comment on that. So I'll take the comments off here. Thanks.
Thanks, McLean.
Yeah, good comments. Definitely this issue of are we creating just this own little echo chamber is a big concern for a lot of folks about am I creating my own little world where I have filtered out information before it ever gets to me, and it just reinforces my worldview rather than opens me up to new ideas.
Right.
And that is now a question, and I think all of us in how we set our settings or who we choose to follow need to think about, am I just reinforcing everything I already think, or am I actually creating a really diverse news source, which you can also do using these tools. But there's a lot of concern about what this means for democracy.
Although I have to say, I see an awful lot of political debate going on my Facebook page, maybe it's because I've created a very diverse, you know, I have a diverse group of friends. I have a lot of friends who are conservative, a lot of friends who are really liberal. And maybe it's just the folks that I've chosen to be friends with who are, you know, from all sides of the spectrum. But I would also say, look at all of the other ways we're getting news and information. I think, I mean, we've taught graduate courses on the impact of digital media on public policy. And you're starting to see even grad students are getting their information from so many different sources that I found that they're more informed than they used to be, because they're not just checking Facebook, they're checking Twitter and their newspaper online. And, you know, there's a lot of ways to get information.
Our information has always been filtered one way or the other. Now we just have new filters. But it is an issue to think about, how is that affecting
us? Right, because Anne, you and I were journalists, and we used to filter the information, and today everybody's filtering information.
Right, and yeah, it's an important conversation I'm sure we'll continue to have. And Carl, we just have a few more minutes left, but I wanted to squeeze you in. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Does joining LinkedIn or Facebook open a person up to more viruses and hackers? And I'll take this offline.
Okay. Thanks, Carl. Good question.
You know, speaking of Facebook in particular, you do always have to be careful on clicking through links, because there is malware that can spread. There is spyware. There are things that can spread. So it's like the level of concern you bring to anything. You know, if you get something that looks suspicious, that the link is questionable,
if you don't know the source,
you know, then beware.
You know, it doesn't make sense, because some people have been taken in by, you know, different sort of scams on Facebook. And so I think a lot before I click on links. But that's true for email. I mean, the other day I got an email from a friend of mine and only had a link. I didn't click on it because I know he would never send me a link without a note. So whatever you're in, you know, whether it's email or Facebook or, you know, LinkedIn, whatever you're in, you just have to be careful. And if it seems suspicious, check it out.
Mm-hmm. I just send it to our IT guy.
Forward it on.
Do you know anything about this? This is a virus you've heard about. Yeah. I want to say thanks to Deborah Jasper and Betsy Hubbard. Deborah, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And Betsy Hubbard, thank you.
Glad to be here. Thanks.
Deborah and Betsy are the co-founders of Mindset Digital. They are social media consultants. They are advisors, and they'll be here almost every Tuesday.
Yay!
And we're glad to welcome you to the family. All Sides with Ann Fisher. Coming up, Celia Lehrman. She is with Consumer Reports, and we're going to talk about those god darn light bulbs. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Michael Lewis about his new book, Boomerang, Travels in the New Third World. It's about how several European countries got to the verge of default. Included in this new third world he writes about is the state he lives in, California. Lewis is also the author of Moneyball and Liar's Poker. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon on 89.7 NPR News. And here's your opportunity to win an iPad 2 and support 89.7 NPR News. Our fall membership drive begins soon, and by making a pledge early, you'll be automatically entered to win an iPad 2. Visit WOSU.org now and make your pledge and get registered.
No pledge is necessary, but your support will continue to pay for the programs you enjoy. Entries are only accepted at WOSU.org, and the deadline is October 13th.
Support for 89.7 comes from the private banking team at Huntington Bank, where tailored financial advice is delivered by a team of wealth professionals person to person. Listen, plan, advise. Information at huntington.com/wealthadvisors.
And be sure to join us for All Sides with Ann Fisher tomorrow at 11 o'clock for Cooking and Preserving Local Foods. That discussion is tomorrow at 11. Sunshine today, a high near 70 degrees. Clear skies tonight, a low of 47. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to Tech Tuesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher. The number of people it takes to change a light bulb, that hasn't changed, depending on your punchline. But the light bulb has most certainly changed. Joining us now to talk about the pros and cons of the new light bulb and how you can get the most from it, Celia Lehrman. She is deputy editor at Consumer Reports Magazine. Welcome to the show, Celia.
Oh, my pleasure to be there. And you know what has changed in that punchline, too, is how often you're going to have to change your light bulb.
Right. That's changed a lot.
Yeah, it's going to be way less often with the new type, with either a CFL or an LED bulb.
So Europe already has phased out almost all the incandescent and halogen bulbs that don't meet their requirements or the requirements. When does the phase-out begin in the United States?
Well, it begins in January of 2012, and what they're phasing out are standard 100-watt bulbs. And then it continues over the next couple of years to phase out other bulbs. 60-watt bulbs, which are the most popular type of bulb, mm-hmm. won't actually be phased out till 2014. And many types of bulbs aren't getting phased out, things like candelabra bulbs, three-way bulbs, appliance bulbs. Those are not getting phased out.
So are the European and U.S. standards the same?
I think that what's happened is that they're looking at the technologies, because much of the technology is really very international. So I'm not quite sure how close the European and U.S. standards are.
And what is it about these light bulbs that is being phased out? Why? What's the problem?
Well, the problem is that they waste about 90% of the energy, just gets turned into heat instead of electricity. So they're really energy, they're rarely inefficient. And it's you know, people will say things like, but incandescents are so cheap. They're really only cheap if you never intend to turn them on. Once you actually turn them on, they cost much more to run than the new technologies.
And some of the ads say that the light bulbs will last decades, these new, the Curlicue ones. How do you know that that's true?
Well, we have actually tested CFLs out to 6,000 hours and have found that they do last, and the light quality doesn't diminish in that time. So, and we're also in the process now of testing LEDs, but it takes a long time to actually get them in that many hours, because some of the LEDs say that they will last anywhere from 20,000 to 50,000 hours. But the Energy Star requirements are actually pretty tough, and they require that the manufacturers continue to test the bulbs out and then resubmit the data. So if the bulbs actually don't meet this data, then that claim will come off of the Energy Star bulbs, which is one of the reasons it's important to look for an Energy Star bulb.
Now, when you pick out a 40 or a 60 or a 100-watt bulb as they stand now, you're doing that because you're looking for a certain level of brightness or
right.
a three-way bulb. How is that managed with the new technology?
Well, it's actually a more accurate way with the new technology, because watts is a measure that we just got comfortable with, and that was the way the industry organized it. But it didn't tell you how bright the bulbs were per se, because brightness is really about lumens, and that's a new term that people are going to have to get used to. And it depends on the number of, you know, a 40-watt equivalent needs to have about 450 lumens. A 60-watt, about 800 lumens. And we have a lot of those details on, you know, sort of if you're looking for this many watts, how many lumens do you need, on our website, consumerreports.org. So really what you want to look for are lumens.
614-292-8513. That's the number to call. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guest is Celia Lehrman. She's deputy editor at Consumer Reports magazine, and we're talking about the light bulb. Not a joke. True story. We are talking about the light bulb. It, in Europe, it is now lights out for the 60-watt bulb. They're going to be phasing it out in the United States as well. If you want to learn more about that, give us a call. My guest, Celia Lehrman at Consumer Reports magazine. So what have been the problems in the past with the compact fluorescents, the CFLs, and the light-emitting diodes, which now I know what all that means now, the LEDs? Is it you're saying that that's where the too much energy was escaping or was wasting too much energy with those?
No, the actual, the regular old Edison incandescent bulbs were wasting a lot of energy.
Okay.
Both the CFLs and the LEDs, some of the problems, the old problems, were with CFLs that they hummed and they buzzed, the light flickered, and they didn't reach full, they took a very long time to reach full brightness. And for the most part, all of those have been taken care of with the new technologies, though they still take anywhere from 15 seconds to up to 2 minutes to hit full brightness. And that's usually for the outdoor bulbs. They take longer for the outdoor CFLs to hit full brightness. And CFLs are generally not dimmable. LEDs, on the other hand, are dimmable. They are instant on right away. Many of them can be used with timers and photo sensors and motion sensors, so that LEDs have a lot of advantages over CFLs. The disadvantage they have is it's a pretty new technology and it's still pretty expensive. Bulbs can cost anywhere from $20 to $60. But even at that cost, surprisingly, they can still save you hundreds of dollars over their lifetime because, as we mentioned, they're going to last so long.
So say you've got a hall light. You know, the hall light's the sort of thing you flick on as you're walking through the hall or whatever, and then you flick it off. And when it takes 15 seconds to get it to the full brightness, it's kind of irritating.
Yeah, so that's an area where you probably might want to spring for an LED.
Okay.
And the nice thing about that, I have a hall light, and I'm waiting for it to burn out because it's in this very fragile fixture, and every time we have to change the light bulb, my husband and I argue about who's going to do it. And once this one goes out, I'm putting in an LED, and then I'm not going to have to change it for like 20 years.
Until you sell the house.
Yeah, until I sell the house.
It could be actually a selling point for houses, all new LED lights.
Well, you know, it's a pretty amazing thing in terms of how much more efficient they are and how much better the light has gotten. Now, the thing with LEDs is of course, the sticking point is the cost. Mm-hmm. But those costs are actually going down pretty quickly. And also, there are lots of rebates and coupons that either both manufacturers are offering or state utilities are offering, so that it helps bring the cost of the bulbs down. And the more you bring the cost of those bulbs down, the faster you're going to save money and the more money you're going to save over the life of the bulb.
Kathy in Mount Vernon, you're on the air with Celia Lehrman from Consumer Reports magazine. Welcome to the show, Kathy.
Hi, thank you. Mm-hmm. I built a new house about a year and a half ago and put in several of the CFL bulbs, and they are burning out now. And so I just wondered, someone told me that if you turn them on and then turn them off right away, that you're decreasing the lifespan, and that's going to be the way I use these bulbs. So I just wondered if that's true.
I also have
a question about where do I dispose of them, because I'm concerned about the mercury that's in them.
Sure. Okay. Well, that can be true. And I'll need to know, are they just recessed light fixtures in your home? So because those they're just regular fixtures.
They're just regular fixtures.
That does diminish the life if you turn them on or off very quickly for just a minute, like 2 minutes or so. 5 minutes or so, or anything more than 5 or 10 minutes, they shouldn't be diminishing the lifespan. Also, you might also want to look for, again, the Energy Star bulbs, because when we've done tests of bulbs, the ones that are Energy Star versus the ones that aren't Energy Star, the ones that are Energy Star have lasted longer, so that might be something to consider. And if you still have the receipts for the bulbs, you can actually send them back to the manufacturers if they were supposed to last a certain number of hours. And if you've only had them for a year and a half, they obviously haven't. You can get your money back. But another thing for you to keep in mind, you had asked where do you recycle them. These days, there are actually a lot of places you can recycle bulbs. Home Depot, Lowe's, IKEA, and some Ace Hardware stores will all accept used CFLs. And you didn't have to buy them there. You can just bring them to the stores, and they will take them.
And what are they doing with them?
They are sending them to manufacturers. They're sending them to recycling centers to recapture the mercury.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Kathy, for that call.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Karen in Pickerington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Karen.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. My question is about recessed lighting. I have much of it in my home, and it seems the CFL bulbs that I've tried in the recesses don't provide as much light as the floodlight lamps that I've had in there before. Is there any recommendation on what type of light I should be looking for?
Well, we had several very highly rated flood reflector bulbs. I think it's, again, the lumens. What you need to do is you need to get a CFL that's going to have 10 times the lumens of the fixture of the light bulb you're replacing. So if you're replacing a 65-watt bulb in your recess fixture, you should be looking for about 650 lumens. So that'll give you the same amount of light. But another really important thing for everyone to recommend, to remember, whether they're looking at CFLs or LEDs, you also don't want to just confuse brightness with the actual color of the light.
Yeah.
Because that's been another thing that people don't like about the new bulbs. They feel like the light doesn't have that same warm quality. And in order to get that same light, you need to look at the color temperature of the light. And all of the bulbs have this information on their labels. And if you're looking to match an incandescent bulb, what you're really looking for is about 2,700 kelvins of light. Though you'll see other temperatures in the store. You'll see 3,000. That gives you more of a white, sort of halogen-like light. And you also see numbers all the way up to 5,000, and it's very common. I mean, I've seen this when I go to the store. People are looking at bulbs, and one of them says it's 2,700, and the other said it's 5,000, and they go, well, I mean, the 5,000 must be twice as bright or twice as good. But really, it's not twice as bright. It's just going to give you a bluer light, which is not particularly attractive indoors. It doesn't make you look very good. It's only good for like task lighting, like for reading or for sewing or something like that.
I have a recessed light right over my front door. It's on outside. Are there outdoor bulbs that are available with the brighter lumens that
yes,
or the warmer
yes,
light?
There are for both. There certainly are for CFLs, and there are some for LEDs as well.
Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Thanks, Karen.
Okay.
614-292-8513, still with us. Celia Lehrman, she's deputy editor at Consumer Reports magazine, and we're talking about light bulbs, and there's an article about them in Consumer Reports October issue. You can go to that. You can also go to consumerreports.org and get on their website and check it out. Roger, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Roger.
Hi, and thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I guess my first question was really answered about the mercury, but I had a question. I use a lot of CFLs in the house, and it seems like when you look at the shading of, say, a color of a blouse, it looks different in a natural light, incandescent light, and a CFL. Is there a way to get the more natural light with a CFL or to match the incandescent so you have the same shade?
Is that what you were just talking about?
Yeah,
that's kind of
the color temperature. You want to look at the color temperature. So if you're looking to match the incandescent, you're looking for something that's a 2,700 Kelvin, and that's going to give you a warmer yellow light, which is more like an incandescent bulb.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you.
Thanks, Donald.
You're very welcome.
Or Roger, I'm sorry. 614-292-8513. Donald, you probably know now that you're next in line. Welcome to the show, Donald.
Hi, thanks, Ann, for taking my call. I have been using fluorescent lights for a long time, probably 10 years or so, And I've run into quite a few of them that don't operate as they're advertised to work. They either don't last very long or they don't put out enough light. And so I just think that if the government is going to require that we use these, they should make sure that they actually work.
I agree with you, and I also think that what's good to know is we've seen a lot of improvement in bulbs over the last 3 to 5 years. So I think that that's going to be something that's a good is good news. But also, if you go for an Energy Star product, they do actually go through rigorous testing for durability and brightness and how quickly they go on. So if you're looking for bulbs, in addition to our ratings, you also want to look for an Energy Star rated product.
Thanks, Donald, for that call. Lars in Old Town East, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Lars.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call in.
You're welcome.
I have a question for your specialist there from Consumer Reports, and oddly it ties into Facebook. I've seen a number of videos that were posted with regards to compact fluorescence and them emitting some sort of a magnetic or harmful output that is, you know, that can affect your mood or things like that. And I've seen a number of these videos where they have some sort of a magnetic or a electronic detection device that shows that these bulbs are putting out things into your living atmosphere. Does she know anything about this?
Well, I've heard about the there's some concern with the light they put out in terms of UV lighting. And there have been a lot of studies by both governments here and abroad. And really what they found with the UV light is unless you have a light sensitivity condition like lupus, you're really fine with using a CFL. As far as the magnetic currents and whatnot, I haven't actually heard of that. No, sorry.
Okay.
Lars,
thanks.
Corinne, we're running out of time, but I wanted to squeeze you in. Welcome to the show, Corinne.
Oh, yeah, thanks. Mm-hmm. I'm interested in finding out more about floodlights or bulbs that I've been putting in that don't work with my dimmer switches. Is there anything I can look for there?
Yes. Actually, with CFLs, it has to be a dimmable CFL to work with a dimmer switch.
Okay.
LEDs, in generally, don't need that. They're also, if you've got multiple fixtures that are working this dimmer, you want to look for a dimmer that's actually compatible with LEDs and CFLs. We've tested some of those in the past, and they've been fine. They actually do work very well, and they don't cost very much. They cost about $20, $25. It's pretty easy to replace your current dimmer with a CFL dimmer. And one of the things that's nice about these dimmers that are made for CFLs and LEDs is that if you have more than one light on the dimmer, they'll actually all dim down at the same rate, the way it does with an incandescent. Mm-hmm. But if you're using a CFL or an LED, you want to make sure that the bulbs are actually dimmable.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Thanks for that call, Corinne. We have run out of time. I want to thank my guest, Celia Lehrman, Deputy Editor at Consumer Reports Magazine. Celia, thanks so much for joining us today.
You're very welcome.
Appreciate it. And if you want to learn more about the light bulbs we've been talking about today, you can go to consumerreports.org. It's there's a big article about it in their October issue as well. So thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7, NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.